And there are a few things in life that make you feel as young and as spry as a bad back. So my apologies this morning. I've been standing in the back. I went to get up from the conference room table. And I hurt my back a little bit yesterday. And I went to get up from the conference room table and almost couldn't get up. So I was scared to sit all morning. So we'll see how this goes. I don't know if my back goes bad. That'll just be the end. So hopefully things go all right. It's a little bit weird to get up after worrying the last hour and a half about your back, and then you start wondering, oh, now I have to preach, and I don't feel like I've thought about it for the last hour and a half, but we'll see how it goes. Hopefully the Lord will speak. This morning I'm sharing about something that has been on my mind a little bit off and on since 2020. I think most of us, year of 2020, we have some very vivid memories of 2020 with COVID and with all that entailed. My memories of COVID, Jason Yoder requested prayer for this weird virus in China at youth group, and I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. What are we talking about? And then the world went how the world went. We all know that. The distinct memory I have from COVID was wrestling with our response to it. There was a lot of fear. We saw a lot of fear in people, right? We all kind of chuckle, oh, this person that was scared enough to wear a mask in the car by themselves, what was their problem, right? But I even had to think about, as a Christian church, what is our, and I'm not talking Living Water, I'm just talking Christians as a whole, how is our response when our personal safety is threatened? What is our response when things may cost us our lives? It seemed to be, and I get it, God gave each one of us, in us, a God-given desire to live. I'm not here to refute that in any way, shape, or form. That's there by God, and you can even see older people on deathbed at 90 years old, their bodies struggling to survive. So I get that. I was also confused sometimes by Christians that seem to think the worst thing in the world would be to die and to go to heaven. I'm like, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I think, I get it, you have children, you have grandchildren, you have all of those things, responsibilities, but what's the world supposed to think when we act like that would be an absolutely awful thing? So there's two ditches. One ditch is, I'm scared of everything, fear rules my life, I don't want anything that's remotely unsafe. The other ditch is, let's go jump off a cliff that's 500 feet high, and if God's will is that I survive, I will survive that, all right? There is a middle ground, and I don't want us to think either one of those is completely correct. So how tightly do I hold on to my physical safety, and how tightly should I hold on to my physical safety? The title of my sermon this morning is The Idol of Safety. The Idol of Safety. So we've all heard the phrase, the safest place is in the center of God's will. Anyone know the chapter and verse that comes from? It's not a chapter and a verse. It's a saying. All right? So I want us to think about that a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and just define God's will with a broad brush and say it's his divine plan for my life and for your life. So the safest place is in the center of God's plan for my life. Now I want us to define the other word, and the other word I want us to think about is the word safest, or safe, or safety. How would you define that? Does anyone want to participate with that? No one. I was afraid of that. That's fine. I think often we think about that as physical safety, and we use it as the idea of you can go on a mission trip to the middle of Africa, and if it's God's desire that you can survive just as good in the heart of Africa as you can in northern Indiana, and that is 100% true. However, there is a little bit of a danger, I believe, in thinking of that a lot as physical safety, because the temptation then in our flesh, I think, is to use safety as a guide to whether or not I'm in God's will. That makes a little bit of sense. So the safest place is in the center of God's will. Therefore, that means if it feels unsafe, it must not be God's will. That is our temptation to take that in our head. All right? If I'm safe, I must be in God's will. If I'm not safe, I now know I am not in God's will. Or we can say this doesn't feel safe, therefore God must not want me to do it. And once we start saying that, I think it's very easy to become a very passive Christian that falls into the American dream a little bit and doesn't want anything that doesn't feel incredibly safe. It's very interesting. I've been working on this message for a couple weeks, driving down the road this week, turned on the radio, which I rarely do, listened to talk radio, which I do even less frequently, And the guy there was talking about Donald Trump and how Americans are going to love Donald Trump because he's bringing back the two things that Americans care about. Americans only care about two things. You can summarize it into two things. Two things. I don't even know who this man was. The two things he summarized were money, and I think we can understand that. Americans seem to care a lot about money. Second thing, safety. He said Americans only care about money, and we care about safety. If we feel safe and we have money to do what we want, we'll be very happy. And I had to think, well, that's interesting. I think we as an American church can fall into that temptation as well. Going back to our original quote, the safest place is in the center of God's will. Anyone know who that quote is attributed to? Now, I'm going to ruin that quote for you for the rest of your life by telling you who it's from. So if you want to plug your ears, you can do that now. Everyone watch and see if anyone's plugging their ears. Corrie ten Boom. Corrie ten Boom said that statement. The safest place is in the center of God's will. And Corrie ten Boom helped rescue Jews and got thrown into concentration camps and had siblings die, and all of that happened. Physical safety was zero for that lady because she followed God and his will. She said it's God's will that these Jews be saved, or that I help with that, and doing that cost her complete physical safety. All right, so if we're going to use that and say it's physical safety, then look at Corrie ten Boom's life and tell me if that was true for her, because I don't think it was. Our text today is going to be Matthew chapter 10. So you can turn to Matthew chapter 10. Now, I do realize physical safety looks different. I remember having a discussion with this with youth group in relation to COVID 2020, that some people are going to say being responsible is going to look like this in regards to physical safety. Other people are going to say that's ridiculous, it should look like this, and there's a lot of differing of opinions. And so I want to give room for that even with physical safety in just normal life, that there are different responses to it, but we need to make sure it's God's will that's controlling what we're doing and not fear that's controlling what we're willing to do. So Matthew chapter 10, realize a few chapters ahead of this were Jesus going about healing people, helping people. Then he gets to Matthew chapter 10, and he's going to send the 12 apostles out. And I'm going to start reading at verse 5, and we'll read through verse 33. I'm going to interrupt and give my thoughts as we go through these verses, okay? I'm not necessarily looking at this as like how to do evangelism. I'm specifically looking at these verses in regards to safety and how safe we as Christians should expect to be. So starting at verse 5, and these 12 Jesus sent out and commanded them, saying, do not go into the way of the Gentiles, and do not enter a city of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. So as he sends these apostles out, he gives them specific instructions to go to the house of Israel. So if you had these men choose, do you want to go to Israel, do you want to go to the Samaritans, or do you want to go to the Gentiles, I think 12 out of 12 would say Israel. Even though Israel ended up killing Jesus, that was more comfortable to them. So we're starting off with something somewhat comfortable to them, feels somewhat safe. He's also giving them the ability to do miracles, as it says in verse 8. One of those miracles is raising the dead. So we are not limiting their ability to do miracles much at all. And they are supposed to tell people that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. If you read the entire context of this passage, and I realize I'm kind of chopping this up, this very much sounded like the apostles were supposed to go out. They were supposed to preach kind of as just street ministry. They're going into a town. They start talking to people on the street. They meet them in their house, things like that. It's not a very confrontational. They're not supposed to go marching into the synagogues and grab a rabbi and start a deep theological debate. It's much more just house to house, a little bit more relaxed in that regard. So if we're going to do evangelism, at this point, this sounds fairly good. You get to go to Israel, who you're fairly familiar with. Obviously, you grew up there. That feels more comfortable than some other things. You have the power to do miracles. It sounds fairly ideal to this point. Now, moving on to verse 9. Reading again at verse 9. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money belts, nor bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staffs, for a worker is worthy of his food. It starts to get a little bit more uncomfortable at this point. You're supposed to put your faith in God, and that through the people you're going to, God will provide your needs. So we're going to use the word uncomfortable or even unresponsible. You're going to go into missions not knowing how it's going to turn out. That sounds a little bit irresponsible and therefore possibly a little unsafe. Verse 11. Now whatever city or town you enter, inquire who in it is worthy and stay there till you go out. And when you go into a household, greet it. If the household is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whoever will not receive you nor hear your words when you depart from that house or city, shake off the dust from your feet. Assuredly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. So not everyone's going to accept your message. There's going to be some resistance here. So you're looking for someone who is worthy, who accepts your message. You'll stay with them. There'll be a blessing on that house. If not, you are given the option and encouraged to leave if they're not willing to receive you or the message. So this may be a little bit unsafe, maybe a little bit irresponsible. However, Jesus commanded them to do it. And if they were rejected, there was a judgment for those people, which may in our flesh feel a little bit good if we're going to get rejected. At least there's a judgment coming, which we're going to talk about that later. That's not a great response. So this is not a perfect situation, but it's not terrible at this point. At this point, the safest place in the center of God's will seems to be somewhat true if we're thinking about physical safety, foreshadowing it's going to radically change as we continue reading. So verse 16, behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak, for it will be given you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. So he's sending them out as sheep among wolves. One sheep in the midst of wolves, or two or three. Not an ideal situation. Persecution is going to come. There's going to be negative things that happen. Mentions in verse 17 being dragged in front of councils and into synagogues. Councils had the idea there of the civic or cultural area, so the culture is not going to accept you, and then the synagogues there deals with the religious leaders. So you have the idea here, you're going out with your message, and you're going out as sheep in the midst of wolves, and realize that the culture is not going to love you, and realize that the religions aren't going to love you. And it, as I attempted to emphasize in verses 17, 18, and 19, the verb there is will. It will happen. That is going to be what happens. And then also there is a promise in verse 19. It will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it's not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. I came across a quote in my study that is good to think about, and I'm not sure it's where we are. It's not sure where I am in regards to this. The quote is, it was not the humiliation which early Christians dreaded, not even the cruel pain of persecution and the agony. But many of them feared that their own unskillfulness in words and defense might injure rather than commend the truth. So this promise is a promise that God will give them the words that they need. And I had to think, I wonder, is that what keeps us from sharing? Is that what keeps us from going? Is it the fear that we are not going to stand worthy of God's truth? Or is it the fear of the persecution or the resistance we're going to face? So at this point, going out as apostles is not as safe as it once was. You're going to face persecution, the religion, religious leaders, and the society are not going to like you. Verse 21, now brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. So family will hate family over this. Some will have siblings and parents and children put to death. In our book, we're going through right now in The Forge, Radical, it had a story in there of a young couple who became Christians, and their family hated them, so they left them. They had little interaction with them. They finally got the relationship back to where there was some interaction, and several years later, it was a little bit better, and the husband goes and drops the wife off at her parents' house, ran into town to do something. I forget the exact story. Came back, and his wife was dead. The parents had poisoned her. They said, if you're going to be a Christian, here, sit down and eat some food with us. And they killed her because of her faith. So that's what these verses are talking about. Parents will literally hate their children. It doesn't really make sense. We will be hated. It seems like if we would live like a Christian should live, loving others, doing good to others, then we should not be hated. Why does society hate us? I think that's something we all wrestle with in our mind. Like, I'm trying to be a good person like Jesus would be. Why would society hate me? Human tendency, when confronted with God's nature, is to react to that. And we see that in what they did with Jesus. The only sinless man, humanity crucified and hated. Doesn't make sense. They will hate you because of who is in you and the spirit that is in you. Verse 23. When they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. So they are told to flee if they could. There was no requirement to stay where there is persecution. So we don't need to run to persecution in some sort of fatalistic way. But when it comes, and if there is a way of escape without compromise, we can do that. But don't use possible persecution or possible unsafety as an excuse to sit in the corner and do nothing. Verse 24, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for a disciple that he be like his teacher and a servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, which they did Jesus, that's what he's referencing here, how much more will they call those of his household? So as a follower of Christ, as we look at what they did to Jesus, what they called Jesus, we should not be surprised if they do the same things to us. They're going to hate us the same way that they hated Jesus. Verses 26 and 27, do not fear them, for there is nothing covered that will not be revealed and hidden that will not be known. Whatever I tell you in the dark, speak in the light. What you hear in the ear, preach on the housetops. The call there is to go ahead and be willing to preach and be willing to share. And the first phrase there, verse 26, is do not fear them. Do not fear them. Fear will keep us from doing anything remotely unsafe or uncomfortable. These verses here talk a little bit about the final victory we will have, because truth will win in the end. So as we think about these people that are possibly persecuting or rejecting us, we are called to look past that rejection and that hatred they have towards us and see a soul that will go to hell unless they accept the gospel. That looking past the rejection and the hate needs to come through the Spirit, and that is supernatural, and that then points them to God and brings glory to God. Think of all the martyrs that did that. Martyrs' mirrors filled with stories of people that God gave the strength to look past the hatred, to look past the rejection, to look past all of that, and instead to see a soul that needs the Lord. And I hope that if we are ever in those situations, we can do that as well. Verse 28, and do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin, and not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. Verse 28, do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Instead, fear the one who can kill your soul. I believe this may be the answer to our quote at the beginning. The safest place is in the center of God's will. Being in the center of God's will is the safest spot for our soul, not for our physical body. Being in his will and fulfilling that and living in that keeps our heart and mind focused on him, not on distractions around us, not on persecution around us. And that focus will keep us eternally safe, but maybe not physically safe. God knows sparrows. You are way more valuable than them, and he knows everything about you. Knowing that should make the first 30 verses of this passage bearable to face. The promise he has there in 29 through 31 about knowing about sparrows means he knows more about us, should hopefully give us courage in those moments where we feel alone. And then just reading 32 and 33, because there is a warning there about denying him in the hard times. Therefore, whoever confesses me before men, him I will also confess before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, him I will also deny before my Father who is in heaven. Perhaps it's time we realize that the safest place, physically speaking, is not in the center of God's will. The center of God's will, in fact, may be one of the wildest, most dangerous places you can imagine. He never promised you a beautiful, peaceful life. He never even promised to spare your life. Frankly, you could be killed in battle. And how would our perspective change if we knew someone who gave up their life for the sake of the kingdom personally? I knew Aaron and Bernice would be in the front, so Aaron and Bernice, I'm going to use you as an example. Are you all right with that? Great. I had to think, what would happen if Aaron and Bernice would come here? How would our perspective on this change if they would come to church and they feel God's calling them to the center of Africa? And so we pray for them, we commission them, they go to the center of Africa, and they're working there or wherever, filling the place they go that's dangerous. And they know it's dangerous when they go. And they get kidnapped, they're held for ransom. The mission organization says, well, we can't pay that because then they would kidnap all the missionaries, which is a true thing, and they end up being killed for their faith. Would that change our perspective on physical safety and God's will? Would it change our perspective if we lived in a country that the simple fact of coming to church here this morning could be dangerous, and Aaron and Bernice, since their example, 3 weeks ago were captured by a mob going to church. The mob said, we don't like you, you're going to church. They were killed, and the government officials said, well, it is what it is. Would our perspective on physical safety change? I think it would. We can be thankful that we come to church in peace today, and I am. But let's not get lazy in the regards that thinking our physical safety is the most important thing. It's not a right for a Christian. God wants us to be faithful, not safe. Let us remember we're following someone who is beaten, mocked, and executed, and then he invited me to follow him and to take up my cross. God promises to never leave us, to never stop loving us, but that's all. He does not promise us safety. Most of our favorite Bible stories involve people doing something very unsafe and very dangerous. Why, I had Todd read the story of Esther. Was that a safe thing to do, to go to the king? No, she risked her life. She could have died. We have David and Goliath. We have Daniel in the lion's den. The three Hebrew boys not bowing down to an idol and then thrown in the fiery furnace. The Bible is full of stories of people doing things that were physically unsafe. And many of these Old Testament stories worked out perfectly, and the people ended up being physically safe. You turn to the New Testament, though, and that does not follow as true in the New Testament. We have the story of Stephen being stoned to death. 11 of the 12 apostles dying for their faith. The early church being persecuted and scattered and running for their lives because it was not safe to be a follower of Jesus. Was that God's will that they had to run for their lives? In the grand scheme of things, it spread the church faster than anything else that could have happened. But it wasn't safe for them. As we find ourselves thinking about the idol of safety, any idol requires that we sacrifice some things on the altar to that. So what are some things we sacrifice on the altar of safety? And I have a list here of a few things that I find myself at times wanting to sacrifice on the altar of safety. But if God has prompted in your heart at this point something for you, do not be distracted by what I say. My examples may not be the same as what yours would be. The number one thing I think of that is sometimes sacrificed on the altar of safety is God's plan for me. Obedience to God's calling does not earn a Christian any kind of magical protection. Do we wrestle with what God's will and God's plan is for our lives? As I look at my life, at this point, I feel called to Northern Indiana and to doing things here as God would have me to do. Enough about that. But as I think about that sometimes, I wrestle hard with the thought, is that God's will for me, or is that me just wanting something safe and easy? Is it possible that God would want me somewhere else? I hope we all wrestle with that. The other week, I was up here getting ready to do announcements, and I was kind of going through things in my head because I'm new enough yet I do that. And I thought, oh, I should get up and say I'm glad everyone's at church this morning, and God's glad everyone's here this morning. And then I thought, I don't know if I can say that. I believe that God is glad every one of us is worshiping him this morning, but I don't know if God is glad every single one of us is at Living Water this morning. He might have called some of us to Asia. He might have called some of us to Africa, and we looked at that and said, that doesn't look safe, that doesn't look comfortable, and so I'm just going to stay here. So I didn't say that. Anyways, but I do think that's something we should wrestle with. What is God's plan for my life? What is his will? Is physical safety, is uncomfortableness holding me somewhere where God would rather use me somewhere else? God's plan for me is the first thing. Second thing that sometimes gets sacrificed on the altar of safety is God's plan for my child. We may be willing to sacrifice our own safety, but what if my child wants to sacrifice his safety? Are we okay with that? Or do we want to talk them out of that? What if God calls our children, our child, to the middle of Africa where they may be killed or kidnapped? Are we going to try to talk them out of that? Are we going to try to convince them that actually God's will for you is to stay here, get married, live in a subdivision just down the road, and bring the grandkids to mom to our place? Or are we okay with them going and serving the Lord where he calls them, even if it's dangerous? Now, there are some questions that should be asked. Now, don't misunderstand me. Missions can be romanticized sometimes, and sometimes they need some good questions to give some clarity. So I'm fine with that. But are we attempting to help them discern God's will, or are we attempting them to convince them to be safe? Are we attempting to help them discern God's will, or having them do what we think is safe? I had to think back to me, 19 years old, loading up the Jeep, heading to Delaware to teach school. That's back before smartphones. And so I have a very distinct memory loading up the Jeep on a Sunday morning, because I had to be there Monday morning to start prepping for school. And so before church, mom and dad helped me load everything up. I've got the Atlas on the front seat of my car. I know, I sound so old right now. We did have GPS, I just didn't have GPS, right? And mom and dad having prayer with me, and I drove out the lane and down the hill off to Delaware, right? And I had to think when I'm studying this, I wonder what mom and dad did. They probably went back. They might have went back in the house and cheered. I don't know what they did. I doubt they cheered, but they may have. But I had to think, I never felt pressure for them to stay. I never felt pressure from them. They asked questions. They had questions about things sometimes and things like that. But I always felt very free to go and follow where I felt God was calling. And I hope we as parents can do that with our children, even if it might not be what in the flesh we would choose them to do. We'd all want them to stay home. That way the grandkids are close. We got Jaron here this morning. I'm sure Reinhardt and Ruth, if they could choose, Jaron would live just down the road. But if Ruth goes like this, that's right. but if God calls them somewhere else, are we as parents okay with that? Special word for the mothers. God put into you a caring, protective, keep them close feelings with your children. He does. Some of us as dads sometimes maybe push them a little too hard. Some of you moms maybe protect them a little too close. Be willing to turn them loose. It's not going to be easy, but let them go and then pray like crazy. Third point, that may be sacrificed on the altar of safety. And this came out of a conversation with Corbin about the miraculous provision of a building in Detroit. The third thing I can sometimes sacrifice is specific prayers that can bring glory to God if and when they are answered. Right, and think through this with me, all right? We're not talking about prayers that are selfishly motivated, or demanding things from God or anything like that. But if God prompts us to pray very specifically, are we willing to do that? Because there is a danger with that. If those prayers are answered and it is a miracle that happens, those prayers can really build our faith, and that may then lead us to do something that is unsafe. If God is miraculously answering prayers, it may cause your faith to grow, and that faith growing may cause you to do something unsafe. It is much, much safer to pray some vague little prayer that is easy to answer and somewhat unclear if it is even answered, and then hope that if it does get answered, it won't really inspire a lot of faith, so I can just stay here nice and comfortable. So sometimes what is sacrificed is specific prayers. And the fourth and final thing I had to think about that is sacrificed on the altar of safety is other people. How many people will spend eternity in hell because Christians do not feel safe going, fill in the blank, so they stayed home and they never heard the gospel? Our physical safety is also an excuse we use is why we do not become involved with homeless people, people struggling with addictions, people struggling with drugs, etc. Basically, may I say, we often use physical safety as an excuse to not reach out to anyone that looks different than us. I had to think of our buddy Flash. Is he the tattoo guy? I'm not sure what his name is. Is that his name? With what he shared this morning, that man needs the Lord. And that man went through some hard things. If we would see him just on the street, it would make us slightly uncomfortable. And it would be easy in our mind to say, that does not look like a safe thing to pursue. He looks like he might be scary. And so therefore, because it doesn't look safe, the Lord's going to have to use someone else to reach him. There's a story from the Radical book as well about a group going to Africa. doing medical camps, very well aware that if they were accidentally stuck with a used needle, they could get HIV. So they prayed about it, they agreed to go, and they served there. Several days into it, two of them were stuck with used needles within hours of each other. Their response, "We're glad it happened to us and no one else. If these clinics were used by God to lead one person to Christ, then it was worth it." They were not willing to sacrifice other people for their own safety. I also had to think of the story of Jim Elliot and Nate Saint that went to the Aka Indians and were killed on the beach. And then later, God used that account to then, as other missionaries came, the tribe was open to hear about the gospel. Would I be okay with being the sacrificial lamb like Jim Elliot? Would I be okay with my child being a sacrificial lamb? In closing here, I want to share what Paul said about his personal safety in 2 Corinthians 11. And I think we're somewhat familiar with this. Just pay attention to what he says at the end. So I'm just jumping in the middle of a passage here. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 23. "Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I spent in the deep, in journeys often, in perils." Perils sounds like it's unsafe. Listen to all the perils this guy's in. "In perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil and sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Besides the other things which come upon me daily, my deep concern for all the churches." That was the main thing. Through that all those horrible physical things he went through, he was worried about the other churches, not his safety, but the others and the gospel. I hope God's call in your life, I hope God's call in my life, burns within us so hotly that we can be responsible about our safety, but not controlled by fears of unsafety or fears of what may happen. May we go where God calls us, knowing that he will be faithful to watch over us, even if it physically leads to unsafe situations or even dying. The quote I want to leave us with, I'm not even sure where I got this quote. I would take credit for it, but that would be dangerous because I'm not sure it was in my notes. And I don't know if it was God prompting me or if it was another writer. But it said, "The gospel is meant to save us, not to keep us safe." The gospel is meant to save us, not to keep us safe.